You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick. We've got a special episode for you tonight off the expectations series for a night, but we're following up with our old friend Jeremy Lucien, who has been trying to get a job in football, trying to return to the NFL at some point, and he's found himself in a new place. I'm going to let him tell you about it. But Jeremy, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Always appreciate being back on this podcast.
It's very fun, and we've had a lot of positive comments from the listeners who are just interested in hearing the story. It's not hardcore Ravens analysis like they're used to a lot of the time with this, but it is a very, very interesting story. And for those of you who don't know, maybe this is the first of these that you've followed up on or listened to, we first met Jeremy when he was at Ravens training camp prior to the 2023 season. And he played his college ball at Vanderbilt and then UConn, then at Vanderbilt. Finished your season. He got a degree in, is mechanical engineering or electrical engineering?
Mechanical engineering.
Okay. Mechanical engineering degree while he's going. And so you'll sense this all the way through. Smart guy, very likable, easy to root for. Has been one of the really nice things about maintaining these contacts from time to time. But he was in that 2023 season. He was on the practice squad for most of the season, got cut in December, then was re-signed again and cut a second time. I'm correct on all that?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. And so, there was a lot of drama going on at that point, which is not dissimilar to the current Ravens drama, by the way, with being short of back end half field safeties. Then it was Darrell Worley who got hurt, and that was why Jeremy was brought back for a second tour on the practice squad, and shortly after that cut, they had a lot of guys who played for the Ravens that year. DHC, DeAndre Houston Carson, right?
Yep, I remember him. He was there during camp, and then he was brought back later point during the season. So yeah, there were definitely a lot of people who came in and out that year.
Yeah, and then Houston Carson actually started the playoff game for Houston. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so that was kind of weird. Let's see, who else was on that team? I guess Worley is the other major player, kind of an older veteran guy, handshake deal guy who was back to play his last season at that point with the Ravens. He showed up at camp in 24 and didn't make it, unfortunately. But the Ravens, like right now, where they're really in a -2 situation at safety because of the loss of Ardarius Washington, we're very shorthanded in terms of back end guys in 2023. So I want to, just giving a little bit of background on that, tell us a little bit about what's happened since you were with the Ravens in the 23 season.
So a lot has happened since then. As you said, I was released for the final time in January of 2024. So, you know, for the most part, just been training, keeping myself ready, because you never know when another opportunity is going to come. I did have a few opportunities with some teams. I had tryouts with the Cardinals and the Bucks. I had thought I was going to have, you know, a couple workouts with some teams that unfortunately didn't end up happening. But, you know, train keeps rolling. Got to keep on, you know, just staying ready. So, yeah, for the most part, just training and staying in shape. So went through this entire last season just working out. I was at home, didn't end up on a team. Just doing my best not to get discouraged, because, you know, I still have goals. I still have dreams. There's a lot of things that I want to do in the league. So it was definitely a roller coaster of emotions, trying to keep myself, you know, positive. Don't go in the tank. Don't give up. I have, you know, a really solid support network that has been helping me through it. And then, you know, fortunately, all of the hard work did pay off in January of this year. I believe it was maybe January 21st. We ended up hearing from the Calgary Stampeders. So we had gotten in contact with them, sent them some of my tape, and they really liked what they saw. And then, you know, they came back, you know, later, and then wanted to sign me to a deal.
What tape did you send? Did you send them college tape, or you send them your Ravens preseason tape? What did you send?
I believe it was a lot of college stuff that we sent them from when I was at Vanderbilt. So I was playing corner back at Vanderbilt. I was a safety during preseason with the Ravens, and then during the year on the practice squad. I believe that it was mostly Vanderbilt stuff that we had shown them, though.
All right. And that one of the things that probably scared some teams away from drafting you was a 40 time that was 4.6 plus, right?
Yes. Okay. We don't need to talk too much about that. But yeah, it definitely hurt my stock. I knew I was going to be a day three regardless, whether it was, you know, sixth or seventh rounder on drafted free agent. But yeah, once I ran that 40 time, I pretty much knew it was going to be the undrafted route. So I already knew that I had my work cut out for me. But that didn't discourage me at all. You know, for my entire life, I've, you know, had to go that route, you know, come up from the bottom. So I'm used to it.
And safety, I always talk about this on the pod anyway, that safety is more of an instincts position anyway. So if you learn the playbook, if you learn to read the quarterback, you can do fine with the speed that's a little bit below par for a corner. You'd been only playing corner so far at that point in your life, right?
So yes, but I always played corner like a safety, to be completely honest with you. So in terms of communication, a lot of the times while I was at UConn and even Vanderbilt, a lot of the time I was the one that was doing most of the communication, like talking with whoever was the safety on my side of the field, calling stuff out, you know, alerting motions, what kind of stuff might come. So in terms of the communication aspect and directing traffic, that's kind of always been part of my game. And then the physicality piece, I put on full display when I was at Vanderbilt. So yeah, I kind of played corner like a safety already. So that made the transition pretty seamless, I would say, once the Ravens eventually moved me. And then, like you said, with the playbook, so I made sure because the Ravens signed me as a corner. While I was learning corner, I made sure to, you know, just look at the safety stuff, make sure I know that, because you never know when somebody might go down or we just need a body at safety. I could get thrown in there. I want to make sure that, you know, I know what I'm doing and I don't lay an egg out there. And then, you know, one day at camp, lo and behold, we needed a body out there. So coach looked at me, said, all right, since you know everything, we're going to put you at safety today. But I was ready for it. I did well. And then they saw that, hey, like, this guy actually looks pretty good back here. Let's keep him here and see what he can do. And that's how I ended up playing safety for the year.
I'm surprised that that's not part of what you sent them, because you've got your corner resume from college, certainly, but your Ravens tape, particularly from that first preseason game, as I recall, it was outstanding.
We probably did. I just don't fully remember.
Okay. All right. Outstanding. So, and that's, do you have somebody you work with? Does your agent have a team that he works with to put together that film, or what does he do?
He has a lot of contacts with Calgary, so that was the first team that he reached out to. So that's why it was pretty quick to, you know, get my tape over to them, have them watch it, and then they came back later with wanting to offer me a deal.
Okay, all right, so that's fantastic. So let's talk a little bit about the CFL, because the CFL, as Baltimore fans know, is kind of a quirky league. They had a team here in '94 and '95, two Grey Cup appearances. They won it the second year, and then of course they were rewarded with the Baltimore Ravens coming to town and basically kicking them out. But there are a lot of funky things about it. I kind of want you to take us through as you're experiencing this for the first time.
Oh man, where do I even start? So we just had our first preseason game yesterday. So the best word that I can describe it, compared to the American game, it's just complete chaos. So one of the biggest differences is there are only three downs to move the ball 10 yards. So American football, you have four downs. Canadian football, it's only three. So you, if you get to, you know, second and long, you stop them, they're kicking it on third down. So you can imagine that it's a lot of back and forth. Some drives can be really short, and you're constantly on special teams kicking the ball. So, you know, in the game yesterday, it got pretty tiring because for example, let's say like we're on kickoff. So I'll run down on kickoff, cover the kick, line up on defense, go through that drive. Let's say we stop them. Now I'm on punt return, get off the field, go sit down on the bench. Because it's only three downs, let's say the offense goes, you know, it'll be a two and out, not a three and out.
Two and out, yeah.
So as soon as my butt touches the bench, punt hot. I get right back up, go out, cover the kick, and then line back up on defense. So it's just so quick with the back and forth. So it can be a little bit of a mess sometimes, which is really interesting.
Okay, you just used two words there, punt hot. Does that mean it's second down, be ready yes. for the punt?
Yep. Mm-hmm. So the same as on third down, they'll get the punt team ready, but that happens on second down, so it's a lot quicker here. So that's one of the differences. Another one is that the dimensions of the field are different. So I believe is it 110 by 65? It's 110 long the field, and then 65 yards wide.
Yep.
And then the end zones are 20 yards deep with the goalposts at the front of the end zone instead of the back. So let's say you get down to the red zone in American football, you get into the red zone, you kind of know, all right, receivers aren't going to be running all the way down the field because they don't have room. They don't want to run out of the back of the end zone. Here, you get to that same area, they can still run. They can still throw shots deep down the field because the end zone is 20 yards deep. So you still have to kind of be ready for a little bit of everything. In terms of the length of the regular field, to be honest, I don't really notice that. It's the width that is weird because I play the they call it halfback, which is the equivalent of a safety in American football. So I could get a corner out in American football, not that far for that corner to go before it hits the sideline. In Canadian football, somebody runs a corner on you, I start running to cover it. It's such a long long route, and the QB has just so much more room to put the ball. So it's actually a lot tougher to cover corners in this league because you notice like how wide the field is. Or for example, if you know, I'm covering on my side of the field, they throw a route to the other side, I go run and pursue. So during rookie camp, that the first couple times that happened, I go try to sprint across the field to go, you know, run to the ball. I get halfway there and I'm like, wow, I still have an eternity left to run to get over to the other side of the field because it's just so wide. It's just so crazy.
Does it require more or less because of the 65 yard width that you play two safeties deep? Or are there some teams that try and still play a single high look and, you know, go off to rush the passer and do such things?
I mean, every team is different. But so another difference is that we have each side of the ball has a 12th player. So it's 12 on 12 instead of 11 on 11. So that makes up for the extra width on the field. Like you have another defender to cover the remaining ground. What else is different? Special teams rules are completely different. So for kicks, there's no such thing as a fair catch in this league. Every single kick has to be possessed and returned. For punts, because of that rule, on a punt, for example, you have to give a 5-yard halo. If you get within that halo, then you get I think it's called a no yards penalty. It's 15 yards, which is pretty costly. So I was playing gunner in the game yesterday. So you got to be careful. Like if you get down there too quickly, you have to stop and wait for the returner to, you know, field the ball before you can go and attack him.
The return man will try and screw with you too, right? And like pretend to
So they'll do that. So what they can also do is I'm not sure if there's a time limit for them to just leave the ball on the ground before they pick it up. But what some returners will do is if they see a bunch of opposite colored jerseys too close to them, they'll wait, leave the ball on the ground, and let their blockers come and get set up, and then they'll pick it up so they can give themselves a little bit of an advantage. What else? In terms
rouges.
Of
talk about rouges.
Oh, rouges. So a rouge or like a single. This is a crazy rule. So on any kicking play, if you kick the ball into the end zone and it's not returned out, so like whether it's just down in the end zone or it goes out of the back, out of the, one of the sides, the team that kicked it gets a point. So that like kind of adds a little bit to the strategy of the game. Like, you know, sometimes if let's say it's the end of the game, you're down by 1 point. You try to go for a field goal. if you miss the field goal, not that big of a deal, because if it goes into the end zone and it's not brought out, all right, you just got a point and you tied the game up. So it kind of adds a little bit of a wrinkle to the game. So teams will have on all kicks, they'll have somebody back there to bring the ball out, because you most of the time, like, you're not going to want somebody to just get a free point. You're going to want to, you know, take the ball out.
And when it's late and close like that, even occasionally, you'll see the return man who thinks he might not get out of the back of the end zone from, say, 15 yards deep, kick the ball again.
They can just kick it again. Yeah. So you, I've seen that play before where, so let's say my team will kick it, like, they'll kick a field goal, lands in the end zone, returner doesn't think that they can bring it out before they get tackled. So they'll kick it back. The other team fields it and then they kick it back. So it could just go like back and forth like that, which is wild.
Yeah, very cool. It's great. It is a quirky game. I did really enjoy it when the Stallions were here in the 90s, but it was a very, very strange game, honestly.
Oh, so there's also one more interesting rule for special teams. So for any kick, the only people that can recover a kick on the kicking team it's the kicker and then anybody who starts behind him when he kicks the ball. So if you're in front of the kick when the ball, if you're in front of the kicker when the ball is kicked, you're not allowed to touch the ball at all. If you're behind the kicker, you can go down the field and recover the football. So on punts, generally speaking, because generally the kicker will be the only one who can go down and recover on most plays. But some teams will start a couple players behind him, have the ball kicked, and then now they can go and recover the ball. So I actually had to end the game yesterday. We were on kickoff, and we decided to do a little pooch kick into the middle of the field. So, you know, I go and run down. Ball bounces right in front of me. I come through unblocked. I remembered that because I was behind the kicker when the ball was kicked, I can actually go up and recover this. So I jumped up, grabbed it before the other team could, and went down to the ground. And then we that ended up, securing the victory. We brought our offense onto the field and kneeled out the game. So that was a pretty exciting play.
Now we're talking on May 20th, and we planned to have this discussion maybe a couple of months ago when we heard he's going to CFL camp, and we tried to pick a date that would be, you know, after one preseason game had happened, with the hope that I would be able to actually get to see some film. And that didn't actually happen, other than this kickoff recovery that Jeremy had, which is unbelievably well timed, by the way. Unbelievably well timed.
So now we have this to talk about tonight.
Yeah. So it's out there. I retweeted a post of it from a CFL fan or journalist, I'm not sure which. That was out there. So if you have an interest, look on Twitter and you can see the actual play itself there. It's hard to see, Jeremy. And part of it is maybe that you were advancing towards the spot of the kick as it was being kicked. Is that correct?
Yeah. So let me think. Because you can do that in college, right? Like, you can have like a little run up when the kicker is making his approach.
It used to be in the NFL too, but yeah. I think that is there somebody in Canada who takes a longer, wider route? Because it didn't look like you were coming from like a normal L1 position. It looked like you, because you're not an L1 in the shot right at the
start. No. So I was playing the field four, which is the guy who's right in the, like, between the uprights the kick. But then everybody can have we stand 10 yards behind the ball, and then everybody does their approach as the kicker's making his approach, and then we hit the line in stride and go.
Okay. So, but everyone then, since you're all approaching and all trying to stay behind the kicker, anyone could recover the kick in theory.
Yes.
Right?
Because obviously for a kickoff, if you're in front of the kick, then it's a penalty. So yeah. everybody on a kickoff should be able to recover the ball, assuming nobody was offsides, because we're all behind the kick when the ball is kicked.
Okay. And it is a matter of when the ball is kicked, then, not how you line up. So it's not like the kicker lines up to take his approach.
From the kick spot.
Yeah. And that's the CFL is not, this is a case where there might be some additional injury risk in that league. It seems, sounds like there's more 12 on 12 high impact kind of running at each other anyway, on those kickoffs at least.
Mm-hmm. It's just as competitive as the NFL is. But for sure, having a 12th guy on the field definitely adds a lot more violence on certain plays.
So you have how many people were in camp to start with? Let's begin with that.
I want to say around.
All right, I'm having trouble hearing you. I'm not sure if I've lost you here. All right, we might have lost Jeremy here, but we're just talking a little bit about about differences in Canadian football, and we're starting with the roster limits and see if we can get to that. Jeremy, are you there? I can hear you now. So go through it again with you, because I couldn't hear you there. We might get it on separate recordings, but there are how many people approximately to start with?
I want to say we had around 95 people at the beginning.
And then the cuts don't take place all at the end, as they just started really happening in American football, but they take place gradually, right? You cut some after each game or some after each week.
Cuts are aggressive, to say the least. So I said, yeah, so they're around maybe 95 to start, but that was including the vets. So for the first 3 days, it was just rookies. So about, I think, half of the roster was present at the rookie minicamp. So it was 3 days of practice. After those 3 days, they made around 10 or 11 cuts. Then the vets came back. We had three more days of practice, and then they cut like 12 or 13 more people. So we've already had two rounds of cuts, and a bunch of people have gone home. Most of them being American, because the thing about the CFL, they want to keep it at, like, you know, a Canadian thing. So there's a limit to how many Americans can be on the roster. So I believe you're only allowed to have up to 19, and the total roster size is 44, but I think it's actually 45 if you have a global player on your roster. Global meaning that you're not from either Canada or the United States. Mm-hmm. So as you can imagine, it's very tough for Americans to make it, because you're, as an American, you're not just competing with people at your position. You need to be in the, like, you know, the top percentage of Americans across every single position. So like I play DB. I have to outperform D linemen, O linemen, receivers, American quarterbacks are. So, you know, you're competing against every single position, which makes it very difficult for Americans up here.
Right. Absolutely. So there's seven Canadians on each side have to start.
I believe so. Yes.
Okay. So that rule, by the way, if you're wondering why the Baltimore Stallions were so successful for their 2 years here, I'm talking to the Baltimore fans that are here. It didn't have anything to do with, like, they had the best coaching or they had the best players necessarily. They did have good players, but the reason they had good players is because they didn't have a limit on Canadians at the time. So they did for the Canadian teams, but not for the American teams playing in the Canadian Football League, which is an unbelievable advantage, because only about 23 colleges at the time were even playing football in Canada. So if the basically the way I've had it described to me before is that, if you were a team, if you're the Saskatchewan Rough Riders and you're looking to replace a Canadian player who's been injured, you have to basically look at who's the best guard, because if you're replacing a guard, say, who might not be playing, who might have gone to Edmonton Junior College or whatever facility, whatever school actually plays football. But if you're an American team and you're in the same position, you go, who from Penn State isn't playing in the NFL right now? And, you know, that you got a broad swath of very good athletes there to choose from. So it's a very different word. That Canadian rule is very interesting. I've always wondered if a couple of Ravens now, Tavius Robinson, who I think was there in 20, yeah, he's there in 23,
yep,
and Brent Urban are both from Canada. I've always wondered, I've asked Brent if he would ever consider going back to Canada. He said he thought he might do it to go back for one final year. He thought about it. But it's very different.
If you're looking for a better way to unwind, focus, or even get a good night's sleep, listen up. Let me tell you about Mood, the online cannabis company that's changing the game when it comes to functional gummies. They've crafted a whole line of federally legal THC blends designed to help with everything from stress to sleep to mental clarity and even some spicier needs if you're into that. Now, what makes Mood different? They go beyond just THC. They pair it with herbs and adaptogens to create targeted effects that you won't find in any other dispensary. And every gummy is made with pesticide-free, small-farm American cannabis, so you're getting quality that you can trust. I've tried their sleep gummies, and let me tell you, takes about 15 minutes, and I'm out cold, no grogginess, no weird side effects, getting some of the best sleep I've gotten in my life when I take one of these gummies. And if you need a mood boost, there are Epic Euphoria gummies, game changers. And right now, Mood is giving listeners 20% off their first order by using the promo code RAVENS at checkout. So head on over to mood.com, find the perfect gummy for whatever life throws your way, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS to save 20%.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Different lifestyle too, in terms of the money is obviously very different playing in Canada, for example.
Yeah, so it is a lot less. Just, you know, call it what it is. But that doesn't diminish the quality. Still feels, you know, very high. So to talk about, you know, the money and all that, facilities as well are also different, as you can imagine. So they're smaller. Specifically, so for this team, we actually share our facilities or the stadium with the university team. So we're currently doing camp at the University of Calgary. We share the stadium with the, you know, the college team, similar to how the Bucks and I believe USF both share Raymond James. So our facilities are, you know, right here on the campus. So, like, you know, we'll go to the locker room, we go in there, the stadium's literally right outside. The administrative building is 2-second walk across the parking lot. So that's where all the, you know, coaches and scouts offices are, and then also where we have our team meetings. So yeah, the facilities are a bit smaller than what I've seen in the NFL, but the quality of everything that we're getting is, you know, still very high. They take good care of us. So I've been very impressed with that. The coaching is top notch. The food has been really good. I actually just finished eating dinner right before this podcast. I think last year I was hearing that players on this team weren't really into the whoever the dining staff was, so they just switched them for the beginning of this camp, and they've done an outstanding job so far. So you don't need to spend money to eat out if you don't want to.
You get all three meals a day there, or
So for breakfast, we'll eat at one of the dining halls that's on campus, and then lunch and dinner they have available for us over at the stadium, and it's, you know, all you can eat, take as much as you want. This literally eating the same kinds of stuff that I was eating when I was with the Ravens. So that's all been really impressive.
Very, very cool. That's good to hear, particularly in terms relative to, say, minor league baseball in the United States is notorious for not doing right by the players in terms of housing, salary, whatever you call it. I had a friend who played in the Northern League, and a great high school baseball player, tried to make it as a pitcher there, and it didn't last long, a couple seasons, but he said that what they would do is they would go into the Shakey's buffet for lunch, and they had a $12 per day per diem, and they'd get the Shakey's buffet, and they'd go in with a heavy jacket so they could carry as much food as possible out at the end. But it was a tough life.
Per diem has been good here too. So we just traveled out to Victoria, BC yesterday for the game, and they made sure to give us money for, you know, to go and get food. So yeah, they definitely take good care of us.
That's good to hear. That's good to hear. What else do we want to talk about? Let's talk about your role in the game. Now we know you played special teams. Talk about your role on defense.
So I think I mentioned before, I play a position called halfback, specifically to the boundary, and it's literally the equivalent of what a safety would be in the NFL, just, you know, American game. So in the Canadian game, there are, in terms of DBs, you've got your two corners, you've got two halfbacks, you've got a free safety who plays in the middle of the field, and then you have a SAM, which, depending on the team, that could be like the equivalent of a nickel. So at any given time, we've got six DBs on the field for, you know, base packages. And the reason being because it's such a heavy passing league up here, because of the fact that you really have, you have two downs to try to move it 10 yards before you kick the football, like on a punt, you're going to see a lot of passes. So there are a lot of DBs on the field, but yeah, right now I've been playing boundary half for the last, you know, week and some change. I actually started camp at field corner. So I've been moved around a little bit because they believe that I have, you know, a pretty versatile skill set. So they told me coming in we're going to move you around. Like, we want to see if you can play different spots. So I started left camp at field corner, then moved over to boundary half. And in the game yesterday, actually, somebody went down. So I actually got put at field half to play the game. And I'd never, you know, never played there yet so far this camp. But, you know, I went in there and was able to do a solid job. So I've definitely, I moved around a couple times.
Let's talk about that in terms of what field and boundary means. I can imagine, because I know what the hash is.
Yes.
The hash gets placed on the left. How wide is the hash in Canadian football, by the way?
I don't know the exact dimensions. I think they're
wider or less wide than college.
Slightly wider than college.
Okay. All right. So college is wider than the NFL. NFL is approximately the width of the goalpost. Might not be exactly that anymore because they've narrowed that. But if you've got a if the ball goes out of bounds on the right sideline on the previous play, it's brought back to the right hash, for example. Mm-hmm. And then when you talk about playing field side corner, you're on the far opposite side from that hash you're on, correct?
Yes. Yeah, so if the ball's on the right hash, then the boundary would be to the right of me, so to the near sideline to the right, and then the field would be to the left.
Okay, from the offensive perspective. There you go. Okay, yeah. So that is how you confuse people, is being a defensive player and talk about right corner and left corner kind of things. Okay, yeah. So gotcha. So you being field corner, you have potentially a lot of the space budget.
A ton of space out there. Yep.
Yeah,
and it's a really far throw for, you know, the quarterback to try to throw something out there.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. So it's, boy, that would tax even the best arms to throw a 15 yard out all the way to the sideline there.
Uh-huh.
But if in the case of the eligible receivers, there are six because there's 12 players, there's still five ineligible, or is there an extra ineligible?
There are six eligibles on any given play.
Okay.
So that's the next big difference between the American game and the Canadian game, is all those eligible receivers can move any which way they want before the ball is snapped. So they call that the waggle, the running start that receivers will get.
Mm-hmm.
So any players that can waggle, it's anyone who starts off the ball. So you've always got to have like an end guy on the line of scrimmage on each side. If you're, you know, receiver on the line, you can move in and out. So like along the line of scrimmage. If you're off the ball, so like anybody in the slot, they can get a running start. So you can start 10 yards back and get a running start. QB snaps the ball, and now they have a full head of steam, and you got to go cover them. So that was definitely something that took a second to get used to, because it's just something you never experienced playing the American game.
So really, you can have four motion guys effectively, since your end guys, I assume, on the line of scrimmage can't move. You're five in the middle.
So, no, they can move, but they can just move, you know, along the line of scrimmage, or just like from left to right. So everybody could be moving during the play, and I've seen that before.
Fascinating.
So you can imagine it just makes things so confusing sometimes, because you'll have guys moving in and out, moving from, you know, 10 yards behind the line of scrimmage, moving up, but then they'll cross. So like you might see a switch route. Switch routes in the American game happen after the ball snap. People will start to switch on their waggle, so as they're approaching the line, so you'll just have like a bunch of receivers crossing different places. So your eyes need to be really good, and you need to be locked in with, you know, what am I reading, like what are my keys, what is the guy next to me doing, like where is he supposed to be? Because if you're not on point there, then it can be really easy to cut a guy loose and, you know, have him be uncovered.
Okay. All right. It's understandable. And I can imagine how it'd be very confusing the first time there. I've got to ask this question, is if you've got a lot of receivers running towards the line of scrimmage at once, who want to maintain their momentum and whatnot, they have to be very careful to understand, be on the same page in terms of cadence, right? They spend a lot of time on that.
Mm-hmm. So my camera's off, so I can't show you, but if you go and watch film, you'll see the quarterback kind of like wave his arms, both of his arms forward to, you know, tell them to start waggling. And I don't know exactly how the snap works, but they time it up so that they're snapping the ball as soon as the receiver hits the line.
Okay. All right. That's it's fascinating stuff. It's a very different game to watch. I mean, it's kind of like maybe watching baseball in another era. Like if you watch baseball in 1900, even, you'd still recognize it as baseball. It's just there's all these weird things going on that are different, and everybody's trying to bunt every at bat, and, you know, things like that are happening. In the Canadian game, it's definitely recognizable as football. No issue there, but you have a lot of different things from a motion perspective in particular going on. I let's see. What else did I want to ask you about anything else that we're missing in terms of your positional role or whatever that is okay to share? Maybe we don't want to go out on a point that's going to make the Stampeders certainly angry about what you're covering here.
Let me think. So then, yeah, but so back to the waggle. You can imagine how scary that could make being in man coverage, because, you know, if you, let's say you're down, it's second and, let's say second and five. You're thinking that they're probably going to run something short. So now you come up a little bit closer, but then you've got this guy sprinting at you from 10 yards away. So it could be a little bit easier to feel like you want to get out of there quicker, but then now all of a sudden they sit down in front of you and run something short after all. So it definitely takes some getting used to. But I feel like overall it's going to help me become much better in coverage and just learning how to be patient, how to read routes, how to read receivers' demeanor. Because this is just something you never have to deal with in the American game. You know, they say that it is very hard to play DB up here just because of all the motioning and the waggling. And from the last 2 weeks that I've been here, that's definitely holding true. So I think that playing in this league, it will definitely make me better in coverage for sure.
If you had to kind of ascribe a percentage to how much you have to read the quarterback versus how much you have to read the receiver, at halfback, for example, could you break that down for me?
You got to do both. So every play, it starts with you getting a read on the quarterback, because you got to see if, you know, is it going to be quick? Is he quick setting? We call it our coach refers to it as a rock and throw, where he just, you know, catches, opens up like he's going to throw short. So you got to read, all right, is the quarterback doing that? Is he getting into his five steps? So, you know, routes are going to be more developing down the field. So after you get your read, now you got to, you know, get your eyes back onto your receiver quick. See what he's doing, see what his demeanor is. But you also have to, at halfback, can't just look at one guy. You, for the most part, I have to see multiple routes and see, all right, if there's two guys to my side, is number two running an out route? All right, look to number one. What is number one doing? Is my corner going to sit? Do I need to go now climb high, push over top of his route? Our receivers are eliminating short underneath. If all of the work that I have in front of me, if all these receivers sit, okay, now I can get my eyes back onto the quarterback. Where is he looking? Is he looking down the middle of the field? Okay, maybe a dig is coming that I can go steal. So it's a lot of, like, you know, back and forth, looking between the quarterback, looking at the receivers to kind of figure out, you know, where things are coming from, like where your threats are. So still a work in progress, but I'm growing every single day.
All right. Oh, it's great to hear. I know one thing I did want to talk about. It was, I did hear some stories about how cuts were made, and not only were there cuts made at the end of a practice, but that there were also, they said, well, we want to get one more piece of information. Let's see some one-on-one activity.
Yes. Oh yeah. Completely forgot about that. So this is after the end of after rookie camp. So we had our 3 days, and obviously, so they told us from day one, the team meeting before the first practice, head coach told us straight up, he said, you know, I'd love to see all of you guys here. Very excited for camp, but the reality is we're going to have to cut 10 of you guys after these three days. So to start that, before we even touch the field for practice, this is what's in everybody's head. So you can imagine how stressful that is. So, you know, we go through our three practices. And at the end of the third one, he reminded us again that, you know, he was about to make cuts. But then he said, you know, I'm gonna call a bunch of names. If I call your name, I want to see you over here. And he called a bunch of wide receivers and DBs, and it was all Americans. And he told us, we're just gonna do some more one-on-ones quick, because I want to see like a little bit more, and we're gonna add this to our evaluation. So that is extremely stressful, because everybody knows that, you know, one-on-ones, it's an offensive drill. Offenses is probably gonna catch the ball. So we as DBs were like, well, dang. Why does he want us to, you know, to go out and do this? Like, what kinds of stuff are they looking for? Is it going to be bad if we don't, you know, win every single rep? I think everybody got two reps. So if we don't make any plays on the ball, like, is that going to, you know, be a knock on us? So it's definitely a lot to throw at guys. I think that it was definitely a test to see, you know, who would rise to the challenge, and, like, you know, what guys would go into the tank. But yeah, so we had to do one-on-ones to prove ourselves at the end of practice. And then the way that they made the cuts was that they would call your phone and tell you to come into the office. So I go back to my room, and I think at this point it's probably 12 o'clock, 12:30. I come back to my room, I don't know how long it takes them to make cuts, but I put my phone to the side and I'm just staring at it, just praying that it doesn't ring. And I wanted to take a nap to, like, you know, kind of pass the time, but I was scared to go to sleep because I didn't know if my phone was gonna ring or not. Similar to Tylan Wallace a couple of years ago, the story where he was sitting out in the parking lot waiting for to see if his phone was gonna ring or not. So it was literally the same thing. But I think a couple hours later, like, I ended up realizing that I made it. So I called my people up. I was like, you know, I think I'm good to go. So it's definitely stressful. And I mean, you know, we had more cuts 3-4 days after that. So yeah, it is very cutthroat. It's hard for Americans to make it, but I'm glad that I've gotten to this point. I was able to, you know, play in the game yesterday. It was my first game also in 2 years. I think my last game was August of 2023. Mm-hmm. So that was definitely interesting to, you know, finally be back on the field in a full live setting. We have another game this weekend against the Edmonton Elks. They're coming over to our stadium this Saturday. It's going to be a night game, so I'm definitely looking forward to that. So yeah, all in all, like, definitely happy for the opportunity. I'm very fortunate to have made it this far, and I hope I can continue to, you know, climb from here.
So two preseason games, 5 days apart.
Yeah,
are going to play an enormous amount of your future is going to be determined during this time. We actually hope, right? We hope that you know, you obviously by what you do in these games, you make the team and have a path potentially back to the NFL at some point in the future.
Mm-hmm. That would definitely be, you know, a dream come true if that happens. You know, I do really well this year. It would be a good chance for me to show that I can play the ball, especially as heavy as this league is in terms of passing. There are going to be a lot of opportunities for that to happen. So, you know, I have a really good chance to put some good tape together, and then, yeah, maybe get another opportunity in the NFL. That would be awesome.
All right. Well, talk a little bit about that, about what the process would be like, your nature of your contract currently, and whether it allows you to return to the United States if an opportunity shows up here. How does it work?
So currently I'm on a, you know, 1 year deal for just the minimum amount. I won't get into the values. I'm not sure if I'll get in trouble for that. Sure. But it's a 1 year deal. So the season goes from the first game is June 7th. The last game is the end of October for the regular season. And then the playoffs, I believe it is, I could be wrong, but I think it's 3 rounds, including the Grey Cup. And the Grey Cup is mid-November, so a week or two before Thanksgiving. So let's say, you know, I go through the entire season, I do really well. At that point, I'll be able to go explore opportunities with the NFL, you know, see what I can make shake or not. Hopefully, you know, something does, that would be a dream come true. But then if not, then I believe that I would be able to come back to this team for the following season. So it's like a 1+1 kind of thing.
Okay. All right. Outstanding. So that it maybe gives you a couple of chances still. And the time is always running too short for all of us, no matter what career we're in and where we are. But I'm sure you'd like to get back in the NFL sooner rather than later if the opportunity presents itself.
For sure. But at the moment, I'm, you know, CFL is the only thing that exists. I want to pour everything into, you know, the Canadian game, learn as much as I can, become as great of a CFL player as I can. Because, you know, even if it doesn't, let's say it doesn't work out with the NFL, I'm still putting on good tape for the other 8 teams in the CFL. So if it doesn't work out in the NFL, then I could at least have a really solid resume for something next season up here.
It's a 9-team league?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Okay. Yep. So it's kind of interesting. They'd have 3 rounds of playoffs, but there may be some buys involved and whatnot that 6 teams are in or something like that, or whatever. I don't know what the rules are. So I
got to look back over it. I don't entirely remember. There are 9 teams, 2 divisions. There are 5, I think, in our division, and then 4 in the other one.
One last thing I want to ask you about, just because I think it would be so foreign, is, I guess there's 2 things really. The first is, did they give you something to look at to understand, like, what the rules were of Canadian football? So how did they say, hey, you want to look at this website? This is the league developed this for American players, and this explains the game.
I think there are websites out there, but from what I remember, no, we just had a, you know, team meeting the first day during rookie camp, and then we just went over all of the, like, the rule changes and stuff, or rule differences between leagues, mm-hmm. and, you know, just take good notes and remember it. And then as stuff comes up in practice, then we'll like, you know, we'll go over it, maybe like watch it in film afterwards later in the day.
Okay. All right. And then the second part is
so many rules. Sorry to cut you off. It's not so many rules that it's tough to remember. For the most part, it's, you know, it's just football. So.
Okay. And then the second part would be the playbook. So, is the playbook, I assume it's fairly complex, but it's probably the complexity is magnified by the fact that when you start looking at it, you don't understand necessarily all the terminology, like waggle, for example.
So for me personally, terminology, no matter what team I'm playing for, terminology has never been that hard to pick up. It's just like vocab. So, you know, it doesn't really take that long to learn. The thing that's difficult about the playbook is because the game is different with all the, namely with all the motioning and stuff, I've kind of had to abandon everything I know about football up to this point and just like completely relearn a new, you know, new game, new system. Cause all the motioning just completely changes everything. So that part is what makes the plays complicated. And then also having a 12th man on the field, cause that's just an extra body occupying space that you have to be aware of. So you have to know, like, you know, where is this guy going on any given play. You know, it's only one person, but it does add a lot to the game for sure.
All right. Fascinating stuff, Jeremy. So appreciate you making time for this again and coming on the pod and kind of updating your story. And we're dying to hear what happens. I'll try and keep an eye on the CFL, but certainly if you have a chance to send me any tape from a game, I'd love to see it. And maybe we get a chance to talk about it again. Tell folks where they can maybe ask you a question about Canadian football if they want to.
So you can reach me on Instagram or Twitter. So my Instagram is JLUC_21. My Twitter is J_LUC21. I've said it before on episodes. I don't know why I, you know, did it like that and just didn't keep them the same, but that's how it is. So yeah, if you want to, you know, message me, ask any questions, you could just hit me up on either one of those.
All right. Outstanding. Other folks out there, it's film study short season. If you want to talk about the Baltimore Ravens and some content you have interest in, passion for, I want to hear from you, have you on the show briefly. Topic of 20 to 30 minutes is ideal. We're not looking to fill an hour or to have a 6-part series on something necessarily. I won't say no necessarily, but I do want to hear from you. DMs are always open on Twitter. Please contact me there. Jeremy, thanks so much for coming on again.
Thanks again for having me.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.